Well, that's exactly what they want.
Thanks for your support.
So we've been talking about pagan Christianity, of course, and we've gotten to the chapter. If there was one chapter that I was maybe partly prepared for, it's this one. I'm talking about tithing. Because I taught a series of lessons on finance, and we talked about tithing more in depth, I guess, than what we'll talk about this morning. We'll kind of approach it from a little bit different angle, because what he's saying in here is not exactly the angle that I was approaching it from in the finance class a few months ago. So, but we are, some of the things kind of do overlap, so I have my notes here from my finance class, and we'll talk about some of those things too. So, he starts off in this chapter describing what the tithe was. And I say was because, I mean, as all of us know in here, the tithe was something that was required by those that were under the old law. But then, of course, as we know, the old law, what happened to the old law? It was hung on the cross. And so we are no longer bound to the old law. And so, you know, for the same reason that we don't sacrifice bulls and goats to cover our sins, we are no longer required to tithe. It was not reinforced in the New Testament. But he kind of clarifies what the tithe was for those that were under the old law. Because there's a lot of confusion, I think, and he was saying too, about tithing in the church. There are a lot of churches that teach and preach that we are supposed to tithe. And so he goes in and just kind of clarifies what it was. And some of these things are what we talked about in the finance class. But essentially what the tithe was, it was a tenth, a one-tenth or a tenth part. And he goes through and says that, and he didn't give the references, but I've got them here. If you ever want to go through and look, Leviticus chapter 27, 30 to 33, and also Numbers chapter 18, talks about the tithe. And that particular tithe was a 10% of the produce of the land to support the Levites who had no inheritance in Canaan. So we know that all the other tribes of Israel were supposed to give one-tenth of what?
Produce.
The produce of the land. Did it say money? Of course, we didn't read it. We read it last time. But does it money that they gave? Produce of the land to support the Levites who did not have any part, any inheritance in the land. Okay? So that's 10%. But he also says that there was another 10% of the produce of the land to sponsor religious festivals in Jerusalem. So every year, and we talked about this in the finance class, they had festivals in Jerusalem, and they were supposed to give 10% to sponsor these festivals in Jerusalem. And if you were traveling, so everybody, all the Jews were supposed to come and participate in this. And if you were traveling from too far away, and your 10%, if your load of the produce and your animals and that kind of thing was too much, to carry, then you could sell that for money, bring the money, and then you could, that was your 10% offering that you were giving toward that. So far that's 20%. You know, you have the 10% for the Levites, 10% for these festivals and that kind of thing in Jerusalem.
Was it 10% every festival?
That's my understanding.
Because there's like
kind of festivals. No. These were specific festivals that they were all traveling to Jerusalem for. I mean, not like every
feast
like the Passover, not every Passover feast and that kind of thing. If you're interested, we can look at it. That's in Deuteronomy 14.
Well, I just wondered.
Yeah. So, but again, what did that consist of? What were they tithing of?
Produce.
The produce of the land, not money, per se. And then there was one other one, a tithe of the produce of the land, and this one is in Deuteronomy 14 as well, and also Deuteronomy chapter 26. That was collected every third year for the local Levites, the orphans, the widows, and strangers. So those who were less fortunate, the orphans, widows, those who didn't have means to provide for themselves, also for the Levites, that's Deuteronomy 26 and Deuteronomy 14. That was another tithe that was given every third year. So he says in here that the tithe was not really 10%. If you average it out, it's more like 23.3% of the income or their produce was given. Not just 10%, as we would say, a tithe. But like we said, that was in the law. That is no longer required by us. Jesus never reinstated the tithe in the New Testament, neither did any of the apostles. And so, therefore, you know, like I said, it was hung on the cross. The law was. So he goes through, and by the way, this morning, I got up early and had, I like to write out the way the class is going to flow if I'm ever teaching. And so I had it all typed up, and our power went out about 7:30 after I was almost completely done. So I have halfway what I had typed out written very sloppily here. So hopefully the class will flow okay. He goes through here and talks about the history of the tithe, where the history of the tithe after Jesus. Okay, so after Jesus came and put away the old law, why did the tithe begin to be preached in the church? And why is it to the point where now, you know, there are churches that and places that, you know, you have to give 10% because that's the way they did in the Levitical law, Mosaic law. And so that's kind of the basis for how we do it now. And just real quick, I don't want to go through and give the whole history, but just briefly, there was a guy named Cyprian or Cyprian, either one. He was in the 3rd century, so the 200s. And he was kind of very unique for his time. During his time, he was pretty much the only one saying this, but he argued that the Levites were supported by the tithe, and so therefore the clergy should be supported by the church giving 10%, giving a tithe. And he, like I said, he was really by himself in saying that. And it was 100 years later before anybody else really said anything else about that. And of course, the 2nd century would be, it was the 3rd century, so 100 years later was the 4th century, the 300s, and who was during that time that we talked about a lot during this class? Constantine. Okay, so Constantine, who's the next one? And he actually started paying the clergy. This is the first time they actually started paying the clergy out of church funds. And he also used some of the state funds, if you would, to pay the clergy. But that was kind of centrally located toward that church in, you know, we're in Constantinople, I guess. Wasn't widespread. And it didn't become widespread for another until the 8th century. And there was one historian named Ibid, scholar. He says, for the first 700 years, the tithes were hardly ever even mentioned. First 700 years after the church was established. So it was not a requirement to give. You know, when we read about, when we read about in the New Testament, what are some examples that we have of giving in the New Testament?
We get the lady with the 2 mites.
Okay. With the lady who gave 2 mites. So what portion of her income was that? Or what portion of her means of providing herself? It was everything she had. Okay. What's another example of giving in the New Testament?
Acts chapter 5 with Ananias and Sapphira.
Okay. All right, and at that time, there were a lot of people in Jerusalem that had come, and they were selling their land, they were selling the things that they had in order to provide the needs for all those who were in Jerusalem. And so, yeah, they sold what they had, their land, and they gave it to the, they handed it to the apostles, right? But they kept some of it back. Was it the sin? Was it the sin them keeping some of it back?
It was lying in the spirit.
It was lying. Because they lied about it. They said, this is all, but it wasn't all. And they were in cahoots. Ananias and Sapphira were in cahoots on that, and they both lied, and they were both killed because of it. What's another example of giving in the New Testament? What's that, Jared? You're smiling.
I know. I was thinking of the nativity scenes that they always had. So when the wise men brought gifts to Jesus.
Okay.
But that's, yeah.
All right. Yeah, they did. They brought gifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't find it. I think it might be in James, but it talks about where you tell someone to go away and come back tomorrow instead of giving them what they need that day.
Okay. Yeah, there is that in James. I'm not sure exactly what. Sorry.
That might not be James. I'm sorry.
It is.
Yeah, there it is. James. I think it might. It's also in Matthew 25 where he's talking about people having a need, and you feed them, or you clothe them, or you provide what they need. And kind of in James as well, he's talking about
we'll go away and come back tomorrow,
and then I'll give you what you need.
But you leave them with nothing for the day. You know?
Right. You don't provide their needs.
It's James 2, where he talks about faith and works.
I'm sure. Okay. Also, Acts chapter 2, you know, kind of going along with what Chad was saying about Ananias and Sapphira. Acts chapter 2, what were they doing? They were selling what? Everything they had. They had all things in common so that everybody could have the things that they needed. Do y'all know any other places in Scripture?
Or in the New Testament? Isn't there in one of the Pauline epistles where Paul talks about the people that he was speaking to in that moment providing?
1 Corinthians 16, too.
Providing?
1 Corinthians 16, too.
Yeah. Providing for what? What was?
Each of you is to put aside something stored up as he may prosper, so there will be no collecting when I come.
Okay, and why were they collecting? The church in Jerusalem was experiencing what? A famine. And so they were all giving toward that cause. And they were giving, and then that same, where was it? Romans chapter 15, verses 27 to 25 talks about the Macedonians. They were giving toward that same cause that Paul was requiring the Corinthians to give, you know, for the famine, for those Christians who were suffering in Jerusalem because of the famine. And it says that the Macedonians, they gave sacrificially, but they gave even beyond their means for this period of time while they were trying to provide for those who were experiencing the famine. Okay, let's see. Are there any other examples? Or anywhere where it talks, period, about giving in the New Testament.
I was just thinking, like, you know, other than just, you know, needs, actually just thinking off, like, what Matt was saying, with the going the extra mile, you know, somehow the Roman comes by and forces you to go a mile, going extra, you know. And the other one was, to me, is Jesus giving his life, which is also, of course, brought in with John 15:13. It says, greater love than no man than this, to give his life for his friends. So,
okay, that's the ultimate gift we can give.
Right.
And then I think Christ also said in somewhere in that you were talking about, you know, if someone asks for your tunic, give them your cloak also or something like that.
Matthew 5:42.
Okay.
Give to one who begs from you, pretty much. Don't refuse one who would borrow from you.
Okay. All right. Let's see. And then we mentioned 1 Corinthians 16. They were laying something aside. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7 says, so let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. Okay? So it kind of talks about the attitude that we're supposed to give with. So I don't think there's any doubt that it's important, it's very imperative for the body of Christ to give for the kingdom, for spreading the kingdom and providing for needs. And, you know, Jesus and the New Testament talks very specifically about giving to those who have less and have specific needs, giving generously to the poor. But the issue that he's really dealing with in this chapter of the book is the appropriateness of teaching the tithe as a Christian law, if you would. And then also the way that the funds are used. Now, once we get the funds, how the funds are used. In the New Testament, what all those examples we were just giving, what were the funds used for? What were they used for? When people were giving,
helping others,
the poor,
those who are in need. Okay, that's really what it was. Those who had a need, that's what it was given for. Let's contrast that to our giving today, and this is where he's going in this chapter. What is our giving for today? If you look at our budget at this church or any other congregation, what does it look like?
Missions.
Okay. We have missions.
I heard of a, I'm not going to mention a congregation, but somebody was telling me about the congregation they go to.
I heard about that.
They heard their budget. And it definitely dwarfs our budget here, but it was 75%, 80% of it went to salaries. And
the other percent went to...
And then there was only like a small percentage they gave to works. And I mean, it was still a lot of money they gave to works because the congregation was huge, but it really frustrated them that they 80% went to paying salaries of different positions in the church.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're thinking about the same congregation, but I heard of a congregation that 100% of its normal contribution went to salaries and church maintenance and upkeep, you know, church... whatever, you know, for the building,
right,
or building larger or whatever, I don't know, but it went for the building, and then they had maybe a couple, you know, like we base ours on 48 weeks a year, and then so they might do the same thing, I don't know, but they had a couple of special contributions,
for missions,
that was earmarked for missions, but their normal contribution 100% was salaries and building expenses.
The majority of congregations are like that.
Yeah, I think a large...
kind of business of every congregation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a large percentage of contribution that is given toward salaries for who? The preacher? The youth minister? The, you know, the secretary? The whatever. Yes, all we have to get paid? Not here.
preacher don't get paid either.
That's true, not even, which I think is good. But, you know, and how is that in contrast to what we see in the New Testament? That's kind of where he's driving at here. Now, Frank Barna, the writer, isn't there another writer too?
Neil Biola.
They are very big into home churches. So, which that's another topic, we can talk about that. But, you know, that's kind of, just to let you know, that's the background that he's coming from. He doesn't believe that you should be putting so much toward these things. And, you know, does it have, let's talk about this, does it have a scriptural foundation, putting money toward the building, and is it wrong?
I don't think so. I think it's like a lot of other things. It can be wrong. But it is not necessarily in and of itself. I mean, if you purchase a building as a church and use it to do a lot of good stuff in the community, I don't see there's anything wrong with that. But if the building becomes, you know, where you're just spending 90% of your, you know, just having a fancier and fancier building and wasting all of your money on it, then yeah, it's a problem. It just depends on how you use it, what you use it for, and how much of a priority it becomes, you know. And I think there's a lot of churches that put tons of effort and money into their building just because it's pretty or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas I don't get the sense that we do that here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we use the building to do things, you know, with the community. Mm-hmm. And we don't put a whole lot more into it than we need to do that. So it really depends on what your attitude and priorities are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your attitude and priorities make a big, big difference. And that. Anybody else have anything to add to that? I'm actually not prepared to answer that question that I just asked. I'm going to kind of leave that to Dave. But, you know, it's an interesting question that I think we need to think about. Obviously, there are some things in this congregation that we do in the community that we wouldn't be able to do if we didn't have a place right here, to, you know. But, you know, is that what God intended us for us to do? You know, I mean, I think what we're doing is good, but we're doing it in the way that God intends. Those that would be questions that we would
I mean, you can't run and reach out of someone's home.
No, right.
Yeah, there's just, you had to have a building if you're going to do that.
Right. Yeah, so. I agree. What are going to say, Jerry?
I was just going to say, you know, based off of a lot of the Old Testament and whatnot, you know, he was always a moving God. You know, he had the fire at night and cloud by the end of the day. And then they were like, well, we're going to build you a temple. And he's like, you know, that's not something that I need. And, you know, I think it some of it depends on, like Nick was saying, your attitude and priorities are based. Because if you see this building as this is God's building and this is the only time that you can ever see God and be close to God, then you're missing a big picture because God is wherever you go.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see that you're the church and that he's inside of you, then you have a good attitude about it. So it doesn't matter where you are or you know, where you locate yourself, you're always with God and God is with you. And I think that's something important to realize because, yes, this building is important to us because we do get together here, but if this building was to burn down, it wouldn't stop us.
It would be a blessing.
Yeah. Insurance would pay for it. We'd get a nice one. But, like, we would, I mean, people would open up their house. We would meet at a park. It doesn't matter. We would find somewhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can look at the people in China that are having, you know, persecution. They always find somewhere to go. They might be underground, you know, because of persecution, but they'll find a place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just God saying, hey, wherever you go, I'm there. And it doesn't matter where it's at. It could be underground. It could be above ground. It could be in the mountains. It could be in the mountains. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think on a perspective to maybe think about, we were in New York. We went up and helped a church plant up there, and they met in the storefront. And while we were there, we worked with a lot of kids like we do here. And because of the limit of them being in the storefront, they didn't have a place that once they got all the kids that they could bring them together and reach out in the community. And so I think on the flip side, we talk about, you know, I think there's a benefit to a place where you can gather people. And it's not, God is everywhere. But in that situation, instead of looking at all the buildings on the bad side, that would have been a positive. They had a bigger building. There was an empty, like, gym thing right across the street, kind of. I think it was empty. And we were like, how awesome would that be for the church there to have a place throughout the week like we do here where the kids can come and get away from that they go into? I mean, so there's benefit. And I think Nick said it better in my opinion than most people say. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just like there's nothing wrong with money. There's nothing wrong with having a house that you live in. But when it becomes your priority and you use it for selfishness, then it's a problem. But there's nothing wrong with the identity of a building for a place to gather because that they set up tents so they could gather when they were out in the wilderness. So, it's all about, I think Nick hit it with the perspective thing. Because in New York, they couldn't do it. I mean, they were in a storefront. And they finally had to close their doors. There's nowhere to bring all the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And what a shame. I mean, you know, what was the purpose of the church? Is to expand the church. And so to expand the church through working with kids, you want to have a place where they can come and they can feel safe away from the elements that they're already in.
Yeah. I think that's well said. Okay. We might have a few more minutes. I think we touched on a couple of the things that he talked about in here pretty well. There was one thing that I kind of skipped over a little bit. It was the 10% as far as it being taught in churches a lot these days about how you have to give 10%. And it could be, you know, if you decide to give 10%, great. If you decide to give more than that, all right. If you decide to give less than that, we're not required in the New Testament to give any certain percentage. But if you look at some of these examples that we talked about a few minutes ago in the New Testament of people giving, and this is really the point that I was trying to drive home in the finance class several months ago, was you look at the New Testament, and yes, they gave. Well, how much did they give? Well, no certain percentage. The answer is sacrificially. That's how they gave. You know, they knew there were needs that other people had, so they gave sacrificially of what they had. So sacrificially to us in this room might mean different things, and it might mean a different percentage of our incomes. You know, 10% for somebody who doesn't have a lot is huge sacrifice, to the point that it might be they might not be able to provide for their family, that kind of thing, which we're also told in the New Testament to be providers for our family. Or, you know, 10% for somebody that's well off is like nothing, right? Give this fiddly little amount that doesn't affect the lifestyle at all. But I think there's a lot to be said for giving sacrificially, you know, for somebody who is a higher income or a wage earner, giving a higher percentage so that actually, you know, bites them a little bit, is somewhere where that person can grow spiritually. Jesus talked to the rich young ruler. What did he say to the rich young ruler? Sell everything you have and give it to the poor. Why would he tell him to sell everything he had?
He knew that was the only thing that was placed above.
Okay. He knew his heart was on the things that he owned. And in order for that man to give his heart to God, he had to get rid of all that stuff. That's what he needed, to give his heart to God. I think that principle applies to us. What will it take for you to give your heart to God? And financially, you know, that's where you spend your money says a lot about you. So how much you give says a lot about where your heart is. You know, what kind of relationship, just think about yourself, what kind of relationship do you have with God right now? Do you have a good, close relationship and you're getting even closer? Do you have a or do you feel separated from God? You don't have a good, close relationship. You know, what does your relationship look like? And then I'd also encourage you to think about, what type of giver are you? Are you very generous and giving toward God's kingdom or not? You know, and it's probably true that those things are pretty closely related. So, anyway, that's all I have this morning. Who else had any comments?
John? I didn't read the chapter, but I won't be here next week. I don't know if Dave can continue on, but it's always an interesting perspective. I read the chapter talk, says something about clergy salary. You briefly touched on it. Coming from both ends of the spectrum, because I was a paid employee of the church and not a paid employee, what did it say in the book? Because I'm obviously not going to be here for next week's
call. Well, like I said, he is very, very much for home churches and not in support of clergy. And he never does, even at the end of the chapter, he never does go and say, I don't support it, but it's really okay. You know, from his standpoint, I don't think he's for it at all. He says it has no New Testament foundation. And it's more of it detracts more from the current. Oh, that's one thing we can talk about. Thanks, Sean. I mean, if we have time. Okay. Let's talk about that for a second more. What, in paying a pastor, is what he calls it in the book, in paying a minister, and paying salaries to the staff at the church, but he's talking specifically about the pastor or minister. What are some negative things that can come from that? What are some positive things that can come from that, paying a preacher?
He doesn't have to worry about, you know, outside things. He can just focus on just trying to study God's word and be able to prepare for lessons to get out.
And the Bible says not to muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain. Yeah, I mean, I don't, if you bring someone in to do benevolent type things like that full time,
mm-hmm.
I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with supporting them while they're doing stuff for you.
Okay.
Chris, it's like any other tool. It's like a building. It's like a minister. It's like a class. It's like a, you name it, whatever we utilize, a mission trip. It can be used for very good purposes. It can have good things. But with human beings involved, there are negatives that will automatically come up because we're a sinful group of people. A paid minister or a paid youth minister or a paid song leader, you name it. There's going to be good pluses and minuses when used correctly and used in the right way. And then there's going to be times when it's not used in the right way. And it's not going to be a plus. But it's like anything else that the tools that God has given us to utilize. You know, when he talks about the apostles going to the church, the church is taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you brought up the 2 Corinthians. And in that, you know, Paul was telling them, hey, you've promised us these gifts. You've promised to take care of these people, these preachers when they get there. Get ready. They're coming. Fulfill your promise to make them comfortable, to take care of them while they're there in your midst. So, not sure about no basis in the New Testament for taking care of that. I would somewhat disagree with that statement, but I think it's a tool. It's like I said, it's just a tool. How we utilize the gifts, the talents, the tools that God gives us, we can make them negative or positive.
So, overall in the church, though, going off that, not the screen, going off of that, what has come? What does the church look like now? We talked about this more a few weeks ago, but what does the church look like because of paid preachers, ministers?
That separation.
Okay, there's a separation.
You see a lot of churches where it's the church doesn't do much, and they're paying exactly. One guy to do like a billion things.
Right.
And I totally understand when you look at that, you're like, okay, you got 1,000 people in this building,
mm-hmm.
and you got one guy doing everything and getting paid for it. You know, why couldn't you just have, you know, a rotation of 4 or 5 guys that each preach one Sunday a month and get rid of the salary and use the salary to do mission work or something?
Yeah.
And if the thing is, if you brought that up, you would get nowhere
mm-hmm.
with it. They wouldn't even listen to it. And that's when I start getting, okay, that's a little weird. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's when you would think, okay, something's up. You know, that's odd that... But you know, everyone in this room knows, if you brought that up to any church, you would be shut down, like, immediately.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's one of the things that does really detract from people using their own talents, whether it be talents like actual preaching or leading singing, but other talents in the church in general, as far as going out in the community and teaching. If you're paying somebody to do that, you know, even though it's actually your job, or all the priests, as in the New Testament, you know, it definitely takes away if you think that it's somebody else's responsibility.
But is it the act of the paying, or is it the byproduct of the rest of us around that act?
Well,
I mean, which
right.
one is, which one's, if we're looking at it, because I agree with everything that's been said so far, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
But is it the actual act of the paying? Is it the act of taking care of someone? Or again, is it the byproduct of it? Is the act wrong, or is it the fact of everything around it that's wrong?
I understand what you're saying. But I think as the effect that it's had on the church as a whole has been the byproduct of it. You know, we don't approach it with the right attitude. And so we have now what we have now.
A lot of us get raised from childhood in the church like that, and that's what we see our whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so do we just think it's normal?
Well, I'll tell you from perspective, because I was a youth minister for 4 years, and I've been told 1,000 times I should go back into youth ministry because it's my talent. But there's two ways of looking at it. When I was paid and done it, it became a job. And I think that goes off of what Nick and Jeff saying, is that we put so much pressure on the one person to do it all. But at the same time, I can't fulfill. If I could do my work here as much as I want to, I'd have to get rid of my job at Healing Hands, and I wouldn't be able to live. So it's a struggle because I don't want to be under anybody in the church telling me this is what I have to do because you pay me, because I want to do it because I love the church. But at the same time, all of us here have a desire to do more with the church, but because of work, we're taken away from it. And so going back with Dave, all of us grew up with Dave pretty much as our youth minister. What if Dave had another job, which we experienced before Dave, a guy was part-time? I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't he was able to commit all his time to doing stuff with us and spending time with us. And so there's a give and pull. And I struggle with all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a two sides of the coin. And I think, it's a tough situation. And because if the person wants to commit their time to it, but they can't financially live like Nick's saying, or Jeff's saying.
I understand that completely. And yeah, Dave had a huge impact on a lot of us here.
Yeah, so, I mean, but then again, if we're using all our money to pay a bunch of people, then we're taking away from the congregation being able to use its talents. So I think Jeff's answer probably is the best thing. I don't think it's the act of paying someone. I think it's the byproduct that we then don't want to help out because we assume because you're getting paid to teach this class,
mm-hmm.
which I know you're getting a big salary from Dave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like we get paid to coach. Yeah,
right, exactly.
See, Chris, the best way for me to deflect my own individual responsibility is to delay the action.
There you go.
The fact that my spirituality and what I should do inside a church building is my own individual issue, good or bad, right or wrong. So the easy way for me to say, oh, my problem is we're paying somebody. You know, I think that if someone's paid or not paid, if there's a problem or not a problem, I still have my own individual spiritual responsibilities to do what I should be doing.
Right. And that's the key that many people miss. They don't live up to the responsibility.
Sure, absolutely. But it's easy to blame an act or someone else or
mm-hmm.
whatever
mm-hmm.
instead of just looking at yourself and whether, you know, you made $100,000 to teach this class this morning or
right.
not. The fact that I'm here should make no difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the problem is just laziness, too. Because, I mean, when you look at what we have, like, drive-thrus, we have, you know, instant this, you know, instant potatoes, you know, for
mm-hmm.
example, you know, just all these different things that just, you know, you can bypass all of what we need and have it right now. And when you pay somebody, just like when you pay for, you know, fast food, you expect it to be done like that, and,
mm-hmm.
and then you don't have anything else to do. And I think you know people bring that over to the church and say, well, we pay this guy, he should be able to do everything, and where we don't have to because we paid for him to do this. And it's the same kind of idea.
And that leads into something else too. I'm glad you mentioned that because what you have when you pay somebody to do that, you have expectations. Nick might have different expectations of what that guy is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all feel like all of our expectations are supposed to be met. And so, you know, this one guy is trying to fulfill all these different expectations. And if you don't, then, well, what are we paying this guy for anyway? You know, then there's upset. You get,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's hurt feelings and all that kind of thing. And in addition to that, when you do pay somebody, that person feels like he has to become a man pleaser. Like, I've got to fulfill these guys' expectations, and you know, because this particular person, I know he gives a lot, so I might take care of his need faster than this person over here doesn't give as much. So there's issues there. Samantha, do you have?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, just listening to everybody talking, I personally agree with the author. I find no basis in the New Testament for a stationary paid preacher or other type of clergy at a particular church. The examples I find of people getting paid or being helped out or, you know, provided for, they are traveling people. Paul traveled. He went to different churches. He was in need. He couldn't have stay at home and have a stationary job, you know. He was paid when he got somewhere.
But he was
missionary.
Also a tent maker, right? Did he not provide his own?
Maybe.
Sometimes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Well, there you go then. But he traveled as well. And then I see more pay as in like a missionary type, you know, like we send people to, you know, we pay preachers in Peru or whatever, you know, or what, but, of course that's kind of like here too, but people, I just see examples of people being supported when they are leaving their home to go out and do something. Specifically, mostly in faraway places, I don't see any example where there's someone at a specific church that doesn't go out and do these things that's being paid. And I think we've kind of personally, I feel like we've kind of proven through everybody talking that it's everybody's job to be involved in the church. And when one responsibility or when one person is paid to do certain things, it can have a lot of negative outcomes. And like, yeah, I mean, there have been times I think, well, Dave doesn't have another job. He can do this. I don't feel as bad about not doing it because he has the time, you know, and I'm doing this other stuff. I'm a mom. I need to take care of my kid. I can't always be at church for this or whatever. Whereas, just your example of not finding people being paid for that certain type of stuff, if everything were more split up among people, I mean, we all have the responsibility to be involved in some way. And I think this has become a way to allow us to be less involved because certain people are paid for it. Whereas if nobody was paid for it and everybody was chipping in, I think that's more how the early church seemed to function personally.
I think that's kind of what Jeff was talking about too. Some is that the perspective people have about them being paid. You know, what's worse, the perspective about people have about them being paid and therefore being lazy because of that, or the fact that they're being paid, period. Did I say that right?
Yes, sir. That's a good point.
And, you know, it's just, but Paul, did he fully provide for himself?
I mean, I know he was. Well, I don't know. I mean, it sort of implies he did in Rome, but
I think so too. I don't think it was fully, but it was most of the time.
But when he got there, he
worked to do
so. Obviously, he would have rather. I'm speculating, but by doing what he did and providing for himself most of the time, he would have rather paid for himself than accept.
He said he didn't want to be a burden.
Yeah,
right.
On people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was one of the few that did that completely to that level. Some of the others that traveled and spoke and brought to churches did not necessarily work while they were there.
Mm-hmm.
He also has Jesus coming in and telling his disciples that, you know, don't take nothing with you and just let the people give you what you're going to need. You know, I think, like Jeff's saying, is there's a balance between it.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. And then I'm next.
Okay.
All I was going to say is I think there's a huge difference between today and back then amongst paying someone and providing for them. Whereas they gave the 10% of produce and meat and things like that because they didn't have the land to do that. Nowadays, when you pay someone, like everyone said, you put a burden on them. You look to them to do a job, do a task, whereas maybe in the New Testament we need to look more as not at a monetary, but more as a spiritual. If you don't have monies to give, give back time, because time is way more valuable than any money that any of us have in our pockets. And giving back, I know here we do that very well with the kids and with each other, but, you know, just in your daily routines or, you know, giving that extra moment to someone that might need it. It doesn't necessarily mean money, but it could mean spirituality. Giving back that way is something I think we need to keep in our minds too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul specifically approached that too in Romans chapter 12, I think it was. He said, you know, give your bodies as a living sacrifice. Give yourself. It's not, you're not always just giving money. You're giving yourself, your time, your talent. There's somewhere else that talked about that too.
All right, I'm going to be quick. I know I've talked with Samantha about this before, but I had the pleasure of meeting a famous preacher on TV because I knew the son. It's actually my manager's ex-husband because he was unfaithful. But so we, I just happened to drop him off with his dad because he was here in Nashville from California. That's where he preaches at his massive million-plus-dollar church. And so we go up into the biggest suite of the hotel. He's got food there, everything. Nice suits, dressed nice. And then he's talking about the traffic in California. He's like, yeah, I'm going to have to get a helicopter here soon. And then Cameron's like, oh, well, how much would that cost? Oh, just $2 million. Where are you getting that money, you know? And, like, I watched some of the videos on YouTube, and it's like, people are like, woo, you know, go Bishop, blah, blah. And it's like they're praising him. They're praising his words. And it's almost like they don't think that it's from God. And they're, and I think that's the big problem about getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
People put so much focus on that. And it was just so silly. Just, I was sitting there and I was like, really? I was probably looking at him like he was insane.
Hmm.
Knowing my facial
expression. Can't hide that face, yeah.
I don't know. But his food was good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I went ahead and
are we talking about whether or not it's right or wrong to have a paid position, or are we talking about our preference?
Well, I think it, we're talking about pay, the act of paying somebody and what that does.
What did it cause? That, you know, like if you're paying, if you have a congregation with a bunch of men and they pay someone to preach, it means none of them want to. Well, why do you have a congregation of 700 people where not one single man wants to preach?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is that all about, you know?
To me, I mean, it's kind of, I would have to do more studying. I know where my wife stands now, but I would have to do more studying as far as, is it okay to pay a preacher? I would have to do more studying myself. I can definitely understand some of these points that he's saying in the book, that of what comes about from that. And you can see it in the church and in the church as a whole, what it does, you know, the negative aspects of it. So
I would like to say one more thing in the office too. I think honestly, since I've been coming here, I can tell the difference in this church and in the people here, because no one is paid to do the classes or do the sermons or preach. That it comes from the heart more so than any other place I've ever been. And I think that makes all the difference here. I know maybe some of y'all have went to other places before. I mean, maybe we all have, but here you can really feel it. And that's a great thing.
I feel like in this conversation, and this may just be my personal opinion, I'm willing to stand on this one, but I feel like we're saying that the church is the way that it is because of this specific reason. And I don't think it's black and white as to whether or not it's right or wrong. Because I think if it were like that, then the New Covenant would have been more specific. And I think the New Covenant was intentionally made because we got so caught up in the rules as the Israelites under the Old Covenant that we missed the point. And so he reestablished, who cares about, like, when he's like, which commandment is greatest? It doesn't matter. Love me, love others. You know, you're missing the point. That's what all the commandments are about. And I think when we get into this is right and wrong because of this and this, and the church is falling because of this specific reason, I think we can say that about 100 different things. And I've seen many churches with paid positions where they're burnt out, and they hate their job, and they do it because they have to, and it's an awful situation. And then I've seen churches that it's a paid position, and that person can do more there as a paid minister and is truly, like, working in the Holy Spirit and is truly reaching out to people, and, like, really being that minister to people and are genuine. And I think that if we make it black and white, right and wrong, we're putting something up that does not need to be there. Because, like Jeff said and what Nick said, it's about the principle of the matter. Where's our heart? Why are people not stepping up? Why are they stepping back? Why are they not willing to look into these issues? And, I mean, I do appreciate Echo Hills because everybody steps up. They see me, they do it. They don't ask, they just do. And that is what the church was intended to do. And if we got a paid preacher, would that change? I don't know. But I think that it's not that black and white. I think it's more of a gray issue of where's the harm.
Well, I think going along with that, too, I think we need to just make sure we take a look at. I mean, we think we need to be careful about what Christ intended for the church to be, too, you know, and what we're supposed to be as a church. Where is your heart? Yeah. I think it all, everything boils down to where's your heart. Where your heart is. Yeah. All right.
Chris, all I ask is if Sam comes to the next budget meeting.
All right.
Dang.
We'll do it. Hey.